So welcome everyone. Tonight's reading is from my newest book, which is almost a year old now. Three Principles of Oneness, How Embodying the Cosmic Perspective Can Liberate Your Life. We started the book tour at near the end of October, right? Because we had Halloween out in Las Vegas. And so it was very good, and then got kind of cut short with COVID. After Christmas in January, we had everything planned to go. And so fortunately, we're resuming some of that stuff. But the reading is from one of the chapters in here, and it was actually chosen by my editor when they were doing promotions for it. And so this is the reading. We live in a mysterious, interdependent web of wonder, where everything that ever was and ever will be is intimately and dynamically related to everything that is now. Our true identity is as a unique manifestation of a miraculous cosmos. So our question for today comes from one of our viewers in Victoria, Texas. So if you're out there, thanks for joining us. And the question was very simple and very interesting too. Most of the time I get it by email, the questions that people sent in. This person sent me a letter addressed here to the House of Meditation. It had one simple line on, do I have a soul? And it happened to arrive on Friday. So it was good karmic timing because this day is a very special day for me. The primary reason being this is the day that my son was born. And so that's my primary reason for celebrating today. But today marks the completion of what is called the Hallow Tide. And the ancient times, the different tides with the different season, tide was a word that they used, you know, because it comes in and it comes out. It's literally the sense of how each season, like a giant wave, comes in and goes out. So this was Hallow's Tide. And so it began with All Hallows Eve. And then Saturday is All Saints Day. And today is All Souls Day. And today is actually the day that we had a really great Halloween get together, our annual masquerade time, and we celebrated the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. What's that?
Muertos.
And that's today, officially. We had good food from that. It was fun. So this is All Souls Day, so it's what an appropriate time to ask her a question, and do I have a soul? And before I go into my part, I just wanted to say a couple things that, you know, All Souls Day, and when people kind of get, they kind of wonder, like, what's the difference between them? And it's changed over different times. Now, my reference point, the Catholic Church has its own approach to it, Orthodox, Anglican, Protestants. I'm going to use the Anglican Church as my reference point. And basically, All Saints Day is a day where they really talk about the saints that have been recognized by the church. You know, when I was in grad school, I attended, I lived on an Episcopal campus, and I won a fellowship called the Jonathan Daniels Fellowship, Jonathan Meir Daniel. And he's a saint in the Episcopal Church. And that's what that is for. And then today is to recognize all the souls that, all the dead, so all the departed ones. And so that's the meaning of it. But in particular, I thought it was interesting because All Souls Day, according to the Anglican calendar, is a time when we particularly remember those who died. The prayers appointed for that day remind us that we are joined with the communion of the saints. So it's the idea that we are, you know, I guess my Buddhist interpretation of that would be the idea that in oneness we are in communion with each other. We're a part of each other, those that are here, those that have passed. So let me get into the question. Do I have a soul? So my quick answer is yes. Yes, you do. And it's interesting, and I'm not going to dive too deep into the way it's usually talked about in the Buddhist tradition, because I find that that conversation often gets a bit confusing for people. And, you know, you'll often, unfortunately, sometimes have people that will talk about one of the principles, the third principle, which is anatman in Sanskrit. They will talk about it and say that they'll call it the no soul. Or, you know, they'll talk about it like no soul or no self. And it's unfortunate because I think that it creates a lot of confusion. I don't think it really helps people very much. The Buddha never taught that there was a self and it doesn't exist. So this idea is one that, you know, certain Buddhist teachers sort of over time, it became sort of a way to argue against the idea of you having something in you that separates you from everything. So that's what it really meant. What it really meant was that if you talk about someone having a soul, then that means that there's an individual that's separate from everything else. And so that was what they were trying to counter, that idea, because that's not the teaching. The teaching is that all of us are interdependent reality, which we call oneness. But I just don't think it's very skillful anymore. So I'm going to address it with what I call the tripartite theology of divine oneness. And I'm going to use some classic Buddhist ideas to kind of help explain it, but I'm going to do it in a way that I hope is more usable. So when we talk about the human being, the idea of a tripartite means that there's three parts. I think a handy way to think of a human being is that it has three parts. And the first part I want to talk about is the body. And that the body, the soma motus, the form aspect of our being, is something that we are most attached to, right? So when we get up in the morning, we wake up, you know, we have to move our body, we have to maybe use the bathroom, we have to do our ablutions, you know, but it's kind of taking care of the body, right? We brush our teeth, we take a shower, et cetera, et cetera. And so the body is something that we're constantly aware of. And the body is something that sometimes works very well, and other times it's not working so well, and we can injure it, and we can do things to it, you know. And so there's always a certain fragility around it, right? And so we were very aware of the body. And so our physical body is one particular way within which we think of ourselves. Is that fair enough? The second way that we think of ourselves is by using a word that is, you know, I think very common today, is psyche. So we refer to the psyche or the psychology of the human being. And we typically will think of that neurologically as dealing with the brain, although that's changing now a lot too, because the idea of the physical aspects of the psyche, that we have just as many neurotransmitters in our gut as we do in our brain. So this idea that everything's about the brain, we've kind of moved away from. But the psyche, we talk about that as typically ourselves, right? That's me. And like we do reference our body as me, but it's probably the psyche that is the reference point that's even stronger. And this part of us is formless, right? Now, it may have some kind of connection to the body, but we tend to think of it as formless, you know, and even in our Western philosophy from Descartes forward, you know, I think, therefore I am, you know, and we have this sense that if a person isn't is it their psyche that they're not really there? Like, so when someone, you know, unfortunately develops some sort of dementia disease, you know, that person doesn't seem to be there, right? And so we really attach a lot of meaning to the person by the psyche, not so much the body. See where I'm going? Because I've worked in nursing homes, and I've worked around a lot of folks that have dementia, and I've been around loved ones, relatives that have had it. And once they start to lose that psyche part, then the body doesn't seem so important. We don't seem to think of them the same way anymore. Right? Now, the psyche is it's a word that's translated as soul. So if you everywhere you look for the word soul, when it's being translated, it'll be translated as psyche. So I think of the psyche as the soul. That's our soul. That's that part of us that we typically think of when we say hi to someone. You know, I'm saying hi to you, and I'm thinking there's this me, right? And I'm saying hi to this psyche you. So our souls are connected. And I think of the soul as the emotional place, you know, and that... you know, when we say something has soul, you know, we're talking about something that may have a physical manifestation, like a form of music, but it really is saying something deeper, right? So that's what I think of as the soul. Now, there's a third part. And this third part I would not call soul, I would call it spirit. Spirit. Now, the spirit, the Greek word for that is henosis. Henosis, H-E-N-O-S-I-S. Henosis is that aspect of us that is bigger than the soul or the body. And how the language that I would use for it is that is the actual ground of our being. And that this sense of the spirit is more related to a sense of an all-pervading, limitless consciousness. And that this, the body, the soul, and the spirit are one. However, when we start to work with it on a deeper level, and I think, you know, getting to the original question, what people are really asking about when they use the word soul is there something of me that continues? That's what they're really asking, right? And so they're saying, you know, is this it? Do I end here at some point? And that's it. And or do I go on in some fashion? That's a good question, right? I had it most succinctly put to me once by a young girl at a funeral. You know, she asked me quite bluntly and very clearly, do you think we go somewhere, we come back, or stay put? I thought that was so beautifully simple. She was about 12 years old. It was just like bang, bang, bang. And so that is the question we're asking. So I'm going to answer that question both from scientific perspective and also from the tradition of Buddhism. So let's talk about the body first. What happens to the body? Well, what we know is that the body, my body, your body, that our body is made up of atoms, and it's made up of elements, and it's made up of things that actually began billions of years ago somewhere else in terms of physical realities. So this solar system and this planet, Earth, and the idea that there was something before this, and that's what scientists can confirm by studying the anatomy and the DNA and the genetics of human beings and comparing that to what we know about astrophysics and the studies of stars. So we know, for example, that we are literally, as Carl Sagan said, star stuff. We literally are, man. The iron in your blood, There's only one element that did not come from that star, and that different people will probably argue which it is, but there's certain elements like carbon that may not have come from that star, but everything else did. But even the carbon came from another process. So there's a thing in physics called the laws of thermodynamics. And the laws of thermodynamics basically say that you know, all molecules or all those things, you know, they go through a process of kind of becoming very complicated, and then they break down. And then they go through another phase. But they're constantly changing. But the energy remains the same. So the easiest thing to talk about is water molecules. So water molecules can be a solid, a liquid, or a gas. And water molecules that exist right now existed from the time that water first was formed. And so the same water molecules that a T-Rex lapped up from a pool is the same water molecules that make up most of my drink. I always like to think when I'm taking a drink that there's a T-Rex. But it's true, and this is what we know about science, from how things work. This is what we know, right? So what happens to the body? Well, at some point, when your body dies, the elements of your body will either, let's say you died, you know, you're one of those people that go out hiking in a national forest, and you go missing, and nobody can find you, which my wife and I love to watch this story. And I'm going to put a plug out for Rusty West. If you guys have never listened to Rusty West, Rusty West has a podcast where he talks only about people that go missing in national parks. It's quite entertaining. It's really good if you like that kind of thing. But so let's say I'm out there and Rusty's telling a story about me. Well, Tony went out for a hike this day and never came back. What happened to him, right? So let's say that they find my body at some point, but it's years later. I fell into a crevice out in a great forest somewhere, and believe me, there. Most of the time, you just disappear. We were out at Yosemite last summer, and good Lord, if you fell off the road going up the mountain, they would never find you again. They would not find the vehicle. They would, let alone you, your little body, never. And so let's say I'm out there, right? So what happens to my body? Well, after a certain time, if the animals don't eat me, which probably they would, and if I went missing, my guess is that a mountain lion or a cougar grabbed me and took me away and dragged me off somewhere and buried me first and then came back and ate me later. But the point is, at some point, my body would, let's say he eats half of me, right? But he gets distracted and has to leave the other half. Well, then organisms would start to, you know, use my body, and eventually my body would, you know, decay, and I would go, I'd either end up in the stomach of that cougar or I'd, you know, something else, and I'd kind of go back. And I'd be kind of following the laws of thermodynamics, right? And my stuff would break down and become parts of other things. Now, if I'm cremated, well, then I'm up in smoke. And so there's just, you know, the ashes, you know, that are left over. And there'll be some bones. A lot of people don't realize that when you're cremated, there's lots of bones that are left. In fact, in our tradition, when I die, I'd like to have a Darth Vader funeral where it's like a big pyre and it's up in flames. That's how I want to go, guys. And then you take parts of my bone and then you put them in the altars. That's the Buddhist tradition. You take some of the teacher's bones and you make malas out of them and you do that kind of thing. I always thought that was kind of cool. And so then, you know, you're ash and bone. And then if you get sort of prepared the way that they've been doing since the Civil War, then they fill you with a sort of, you know, stuff that kind of keeps your body from decaying, you know. So that's what happens to your body, kind of just sort of little bit of a kind of mummification thing that goes on, right? But the point is that eventually, over enough time, even mummies will crumble, you know? And we return, we follow that thermodynamics, right? That's what happens to the body. It goes back to the elements. It returns back to the elements. In fact, there was never a return. The elements were just constituted in doing something different. That's all. Just like water being a solid. And then a liquid rather than a gas. So that's what happens to the body. No argument there, right? I don't think. Now, what about the psyche? So the psyche for us is another way of talking about the ego self. So we believe, or our teaching is that the psyche has five different stages to it, and that the soul has five different stages, five different ways it grows. And it starts with, there's a genetic influence, hereditary influence, DNA influence. Then there's the influence of being with your mother from in utero. And then there's the influence of your father, whoever plays that role. And then there's the influence of your culture and your group. And then there's your identity. You finally form this identity if you live long enough. And you know, when you say Tony, you have this whole sort of aggregate constellation that's you. That's my soul. So what happens to my soul? Well, my soul is constantly changing. So in other words, the soul of Tony when he was six is not quite the same as the soul of Tony when he was 30. And it's not quite the same soul of Tony at 57. So the soul or the psyche is constantly going through changes too. And it's not the same. No, I think I was a pretty charming kid. If you look at my photos, I think that's proof. But, and there's certain aspects of me that probably carry through, right? And you know, so maybe it wouldn't be totally surprising if you met me at six and then met me at 30 and now met me now, you might say, oh, there's a continuity there. Certainly from inside me, it's like there's a real continuity. Like I was saying, my mom and I were having this conversation, she's turning 80, and we were just having, you know, this conversation about how if you never looked in a mirror, right, I'd still think I was 30. And my mom said, I'd still think I was 30. And so there's a part of us, see, that has a sense of continuity. Now, that doesn't happen if there's some kind of brain damage. So like, let's say I have amnesia, I might forget. So am I no longer a soul? No, but my soul's different now. It's been changed, it's been affected. So the psyche or the soul is something that is what we would say is transient and contingent. It's always going to be changing, and it's always going to be contingent upon all these other factors for it, right? So that's the soul. When you dream at night, so here's the thing. So now we're going to talk about the spirit. The spirit, however, from Buddhist point of view, was never born and never dies. Never born. Never dies. So unlike the soul or the body that's transient and contingent, there is an aspect of us, which is the fancy word is dharmakaya, and sometimes tathagatagarbha, the Buddha nature, ground being, however word you want to use, spirit, I like spirit. That part of you was never born and never dies. And furthermore, that part of you is the deepest level of your awareness. It's the deepest level of consciousness. It's the ground nature of your consciousness. When you dream at night, right? And I had a fantastic dream last night. When you dream at night, unless you kind of, you know, have lucid dreaming, you know, kind of like where you wake up and realize you're dreaming, it's the same as now, right? There's no difference. When you're really in that dream and you're in the thick of it, man, you're a body, right? You're not formless. You're a body of some sort. So why is that? Well, it seems that spirit always works with a body. Now, the language that's often used in this would be the idea of shunya, spirit, hinosis, the true self, dharmakaya, the soul as sambhogakaya, and the body as nirmanakaya, the three kayas, or the three types of bodies that we experience as human beings. However, the spirit is the awareness that's at boundless, limitless consciousness, where it can become aware of the ego self. And that's why in meditation, we teach the person just to observe their thoughts and feelings and emotions in their body. So we teach you in meditation to sort of rest or view things from the spirit, using my light. And then you watch those things. And over time, you start to realize that you can observe those things and you realize they're not you. That the body and the feelings and thoughts of the psyche, of the soul, those are experiences you're having, but they're not really you. And when you start to experience that spaciousness, that's you're less anxious. You're less reactive. Because you're no longer so directly attaching everything to your thoughts, feelings, or sensations. So that's part of it. But the spirit, when you're dreaming, there always seems to be, consciousness seems to acquire some kind of form. So in Buddhism, this is the relationship between form and formlessness and what they sometimes call shunya or shunyata or emptiness. So it's the idea that these things always exist as one. So spirit requires a body, a vehicle. So whether you're dreaming and you're in a body, that's your dreaming body, right? Where you're in this body right now, the Buddha's teaching is that all of this is a creation of the mind, and the mind referring to the idea of the spirit in my language, how I'm presenting. And it's just as much a creation of that as your dream. That's why the other night Owen asked me about different questions about deja vu and things like that. And I quoted a line from Chuang Tzu, the great Chinese poet, where he said, you know, I woke up from a dream, and I dreamed that I was a butterfly. But the question is, did I dream that I was a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming of Chuang Tzu? So the Buddhist idea has always been the sense that consciousness is everything. The spirit is everything. And that the experience of a soul or the experience of a body, that's a vehicle for spirit. And there's this saying that comes from the Heart Sutra, which we will chant tonight, which is form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. That's what it means. It means that with spirit, there is always a body. So, if spirit is something that has never died and has never been born, and it is the ground nature of things, in fact, everything is a manifestation of it, then you will definitely have some sort of body from one experience to the next. From one, and Buddhism is pretty far out there. We've got multiple dimensions, we've got all kinds, anything you can imagine, Buddhists have kind of come up with it. And so whatever dimension you're in, and maybe there's multiple dimensions of us going on right now, right? And like Schrodinger's cat, you know, you look in, and in one experience, you're either alive or you're dead. But in the other experience, you might be alive or dead, but it depends on the dimension you're in, right? So it gets pretty far out there. And when you look at how a lot of scientists are kind of moving in that direction from the time of Niels Bohr, even Einstein to some degree, but more like Niels Bohr, Wolfgang Pauli, contemporary great physicists like Richard Feynman and Sir Roger Penrose, they believe the same thing. And they say it's part of science. They say that without consciousness, nothing works. There'll be no grand unified theory unless you put consciousness in it. So consciousness is the element that allows everything to be unified. Well, that's exactly what Buddhists have been saying for thousands of years. And I'm using the word spirit because I think it's easier. You know, it's a nice word. And the idea is that we are truly spirits having, you know, there's this little, I don't know who it was that said it, but we are spirits having a psyche and soma experience. And so what happens when we die? Well, from the Buddhist point of view, there's an aspect form that goes through that cycle. You know, scientists call it the laws of the universe. And then there is another aspect that is the ground or the root awareness of the whole thing, that is the space of the whole thing. And it's always there. And so when we die, our consciousness, our spirit doesn't die. Now, the other question that sometimes people ask me, and actually I remember watching a video of this recently with Roger Penrose. And they said, well, what do you think happens when we die? In other words, so what happens to this consciousness? And he kind of gave his own answer to it. And then I came up with my own metaphor based on what he said. And I think of us as like our bodies are like radios. We're receivers and transmitters. We're like cam radios, right? And we pick up different waves. Now, if you take that ham radio and you let it sit there long enough, what'll happen? The laws of thermodynamics, right? So you might not be able to pick up anything anymore. Does that mean the waves aren't there anymore? No. It just means the radio is not there. Radios have different ways of proceeding. There's AM, there's FM, there's things like satellite. So the ability to tune in to consciousness seems to be a part of the relationship to the soma and the psyche. And however, the fact that these things exist at all is because of spirit or because of consciousness. The last question usually that follows that, well, what happens to the psyche? What happens to Tony, right? Because Tony has this transient condition. History. My own personal belief is that nothing is lost. Nothing is truly lost. That everything that ever was and everything that ever will be has always been. So nothing is lost. And there's different metaphors and things you can do to kind of get an idea about it. But I like to think of it as like the me that's me right now and hopefully dies sometime a good ways out, that memory of that life and that experience of that life could be experienced at any time. That me will always be remembered. Will always be sort of alive in some way. There's a number of physicists that have postulated that nanotechnology, Frank Tipler being probably the most popular, that if nanotechnology gets to a certain level, that humans will eventually merge with machines. And that these machines will basically replicate everything that has ever been. They will go out in the universe and learn everything and everything that has ever been. And then the next logical step for these nano creatures will be to recreate everything that has ever been. Now that sounds pretty fantastic, right? But that's a hardcore theory by some physicists based on their projection of what they see in terms of technological stages that we go through. So when people talk about that, then I think, well, it's not that hard to believe then with spirit or ground consciousness. So I'm not really worried about it. Now, I think in this world, in this dimension or this experience of spirit, that maybe, you know, if I develop Alzheimer's or I get some kind of dementia, you know, or brain damage, no. That part of me might not be available here, but I don't think that part of me ever is lost. And it gets easy once you realize that it's just a change in perspective. When you realize that everything is consciousness, everything, and everything that we're experiencing right now is a creation of consciousness. And it's not really real, but outside of consciousness. And that matter is kind of a myth. And it's not so hard. Not so hard. Thank you. So I hope our viewer in Texas found that useful. So yes, you have a soul. And that soul is an experience of your spirit right now. And then I believe that that spirit has had lots of experiences and probably have had lots of